Hey folks, if you like listening to Stumble Through, there's now a way you can support the show. Click the link in the show notes to make a once-off donation through the Acast supporter feature. There's no ongoing commitment and you can give as little or as much as you'd like. I love making the podcast and I'd like to keep making it, so even if it's just the price of a coffee, every little bit helps. Thanks so much.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Do you find the time when you can't find pause? A confirmation while your face is gonna open some doors. You do what you gotta do, stumble through.
Hello, folks, and welcome to Stumble Through, the podcast for young Australian adults trying to figure shit out. I am your host, Paula Arujo. I'm a writer, theatre creator, and marketer. And this week we are talking about not getting what you want with Steve Peary. Hey, Steve.
Hi. How are you?
I am so much better for seeing you.
What?
Yeah. Oh, no, but genuinely, nice. Like I was having, I had to deal with some customers today in retail and I'm glad I'm here.
Was everything your fault?
No, they didn't have proof of purchase and so I couldn't help them.
So it was your fault?
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. In retail land, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Yep, cool.
Well, everything is my fault.
No, you know what? It's fine. We're here. We've already had a bit of a problem with recording. There's a cat. We've already hit podcast bingo. For those of you playing at home, we can now start the podcast. We've got all the things ticked off.
There was a false start as well.
Oh, yeah. That's a bonus episode. Subscribe to Patreon. You have a Patreon, right?
I don't actually. I
gotta get on it.
I should.
Gotta
I
make
should.
That money.
That's true.
Yeah.
Maybe I should do a podcast episode on how to have a Patreon.
Great.
Yeah.
Done.
Done. Do you want to do it?
I don't know anything about Patreon.
Oh, okay. Well.
I know you need to have one.
Steve, my friend, can you introduce yourself for the lovely listeners?
Yeah. So my name is Steve Peary. I'm a lot of things. I'm a husband and a pet owner, responsible pet owner.
Very responsible.
Yeah, sure. I'm an amateur chef. I'm a lot of things, but I guess why I'm here today is because of what I do. What I do is I write plays and I tell stories.
I'm so glad that like you touched on all the other facets of your life in the beginning. I think too often I really do just define myself by this is the stuff that I'm doing to earn money or try to earn money in the future. Mm. And thank you for reminding me that that's not all of it.
Well, it's an interesting challenge, right? Because like, you know, we're also particularly in creative pursuits and what we do, we are our own product. So it's really hard to get out of the trap of constantly viewing yourself as a product. And so that's my new challenge that I'm trying to do for this year is to try and go, well, who I am isn't what I do. I have a lot of other stuff too.
Like, that's true.
Yeah. Plumbers don't call themselves plumbers in real life. That's what they go and do. And then they come home and be other people.
Oh, that's right. Gosh. And I suppose, yeah, because like in the arts, it's so like I am my work and my work sort of like reflects me and it's a tangled mess.
And look, there might be a plumber listening that is like that. Super Mario was a plumber who define himself by that. And he's doing just fine.
He is.
So, you know, chase your dreams is what I'm trying to say.
I wish I could make a sound effect for Mario, but I would do, 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 do.
Oh yeah, that's fine.
Is that it?
I thought you were going to do an accent and I was like, oh
no.
That's how we get, as Twitter would say, that's how we get canceled.
Yes.
So.
No, I've just never played.
Canceled culture's alive, everyone.
Steve, have you stumbled through anything this week?
I've stumbled through just a busy patch and I'm not saying that in that, you know, oh my God, I'm so busy, which means that my life is going well. I'm just meaning there's a lot of shit to do. So I've just gotten through that. And then it's back to my normal life, which is study and just kind of ticking along, which is good.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I'm also on my own at the moment. My wife is currently down south working. So
kicking butt.
Yeah. She does all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's, it's been an adjustment to kind of be on my own again and learn to be, you know, in my own space.
I think that must, I am, because I, you know, live with people at the minute. And I don't actually know if I could cope with living alone because I've never done it. Like I've traveled alone, but I've always been in like an Airbnb or something where there are people around. I don't actually know if I can do the totally quiet thing.
Maybe you should try it.
I should.
Maybe you should try it.
Because I should.
I have the safety of having someone come back, you know, but in my own time, I kind of rediscover things that I like and things that, you know, because, you know, being in a loving relationship is great. But we are both independent people as well. So it's actually a good time to rediscover the things that you might not, you know, get your partner to come along with. So
That's an important part of any healthy relationship though.
Totally.
Right? Yeah.
Even non-romantic relationships too, you know, it's an important thing.
It is.
Learn how to be yourself.
Heckin' yeah. <That's it>. just general tips for life. Learn how to be yourself and with yourself.
Yeah. Well, it's just two rules where it's like the first one's be yourself. Second one is don't be a dick. Like that's.
Yeah, that's it.
That is the golden rules of the universe, guys. Mm.
And I have nothing else to cover in this podcast now. We've answered all the questions.
Have we fixed it?
We fixed it.
If this is serial, like we've solved it. This is done. This is our Sarah Koenig moment where we wrap things up.
Sorry, what?
The Sarah Koenig moment where she wraps everything up in a bow at the end of Serial.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't listen to murder mystery stuff.
You don't?
No. See, I was a big Agatha Christie fan when you could watch Poirot on like TV reruns, but I'm a scaredy cat.
Oh, okay.
And Game of Thrones is too much for me now.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Very different. Serial's very different to Game of Thrones. I'll give you that.
It gets in your head.
No, I get where you're coming from. I'm actually not a true crime person myself either, right? I feel weird about the ethics of it. I'm writing a show about it.
Ooh.
And yeah, but we'll do plugs at the end.
Yes, I'm so excited for plugs. They're legitimately like I plan my life around the plugs that come at the end of these shows. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's so good.
Good.
So now we're talking about not getting what you want, which I suppose to some degree means failing. How would you define failure?
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess that is the definition, right? It's setting out an objective for yourself or something. You know, we're going to talk, I guess, a lot through the lens of creative work today, but it applies to anything where you have an idea of what you want to do, or if, you know, if you're a 5-year plan person or a 3-year plan, congratulations to you. I don't know how you do it.
But
it's just getting to the point where you feel like you've not achieved as much as you thought you could.
Do you think it, how much do you think of it has to do with expectations, like internal or external? Is it like all expectations or is part of it like that, what's that word that starts with an O, objective.
Yeah.
Not objective.
So you're an objective failure. Which I don't think it's the case. For me personally, it was all external and my kind of path over the last 3 years, I guess, as an artist is, learning how to redefine what I want. And for a long time, my sense of failure and my sense of not being where I thought I had to be, it's all external. And the biggest lesson that I learned is that every time that I felt like a failure is because I was comparing myself to somebody else. And it's just become, compare and despair. Like that's the mantra for every creative artist. And the moment you let go of that and the moment you let go of, you know, the horse race mentality where, you know, you've got to get ahead of somebody else or that your loss means someone else's gain. And that's really hard to let go of because in some ways it is, you know.
There's only so many spots.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like you look at it, you know, for me as a writer, you've got maybe 10 companies in the country that are capable of programming your work. Each one of them does, you know, 6 or 7 shows a year. That's about 70 shows a year that gets programmed. There are thousands of writers, each at a different stage and some further along and further developed in their career than you. So when you look at it that way, there's a certain amount of finite chances that you get. Yeah. So then the challenge is moving past that and going, well, what do I want to create for myself? Or what are my benchmarks? You know, is it to finish something that you've written? Is it, you know, manage your expectations.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we all focus on like the big shiny thing at the end, but there's a lot of like little successes that come along the way, even if you don't get the big one at the end. Like even if you don't get your work programmed, you still finished it and then edited it and then refinished it in inverted commas.
Yeah.
And, you know, like there's still success in basically every failure though.
Yeah. And it's redefining what making it is. Cause you hear about that a lot too, about going, you know, and I went through it a lot too, where it's like my goal was to get to, you know, I wanted one main stage show, and it's like, cool. Well, what does it mean after that? Like, I'm not going to wake up the next day and colors are going to be brighter and sound's going to be clearer. So it needs to be less about my external achievements and rather about what I define for myself.
Yeah, it's true, because like it's never like you get to the top of the mountain and go, yes, done.
Yeah.
It's always like, and there's the next thing.
And the biggest myth is that never stops, regardless of where you are in your career.
Yeah.
So you got to learn to live with it. You got to learn to have that shadow with you. And it's a part of the duality, and it pushes you further. But it's just about developing a healthy relationship to failure, I think. Because it's not going to go away.
No, it never does. And like, I think the fear of failure doesn't go away either. It just changes. Like Hemingway, after he wrote, Hemingway after he wrote something that was successful.
You were doing so well. Keep going.
I think it was like The Old Man and the Sea or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they pulled this journal entry, that he was writing to himself, and it's like, it'll be okay. Like, you will write again, you will finish something again, and it will all be okay.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, and now I have to live up to myself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look back at books like Meditations as well, where it's like Marcus Aurelius.
Oh my gosh, I love Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah, controlled
stoicism.
Controlled a third of the world and still had anxieties about whether people liked him.
Right?
So it's not gonna and yes, I feel gross because he never wanted people to read it, but and now it's kind of formed the basis of what we now know as self-help, but it's kind of getting past that idea of going, everyone, it doesn't matter what you think their status is or what, you know, or where they are compared to where you should be. Everyone has these anxieties.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when it comes to like after the fall, because failure can seem like a very final, sometimes fatal thing.
Yeah.
How do we pick ourselves back up when it seems like, I don't know, sometimes when like I have failed to meet something or it just doesn't work out, it feels like the future's kind of like collapsed in front of me, or like the world is flat and I've come to the edge and I don't know what what this is happening. What? Bleh.
Yeah. Well, the sad thing is that sometimes it is final, but again, that's not always a sad thing. My relationship to failure has gotten better over the years, but my first one was when my kind of benchmark one was when I was 17, and I had a really specific plan about what I wanted to do. You know, I was a 17-year-old kid who liked drama, so I had it planned out in my head that I was going to go to like a premier drama school. I was going to learn how to be a tortured artist, and then I would come out and do super serious things.
Yeah.
And they would do, you know, a GQ profile on me, and everyone would talk about how I managed to make work through pain. That's a bullshit idea. Anyone who prescribes the idea of a suffering artist, that's a lie. You need to look after yourself. And it's also a job.
Yeah.
It's just a job.
It's just another job.
It is. It is. Yeah. And that's not to say that we don't love what we do, but it's just a job.
Yeah.
But so being 17, and then I went for my first audition, and they told me, they kind of looked me up and down, and they told me that my posture was bad, which is true. Like, in hindsight, it's true. My posture is terrible. We both just straightened up. and I was heartbroken, and I was an angry young man. So I was like, I'm I'm not going to do this again. And then I took it a couple of years, and then I managed to kind of, through some way or another, I fell into like my creative community and started dicking around doing a few things. And I went back years later and kind of re-entered it. So I think it's really up to you to define whether you want failure to be the end. It's really actually you who sets that thing of going, well, no, I'm going to push through this, and I'm going to pick up the thing. Because, I mean, it's such a cliche where we take failure as a lesson, but sometimes cliches they work because they're true.
That's why they become cliches.
That's why they become well used.
Because there is a nugget of truth in there.
Yeah.
And it like... Yeah.
And some things aren't in your control. And everything that I say today comes with a healthy dose of confirmation bias, because what's worked for me might not work for people. For those of you listening, I'm a able-bodied male. I'm a white male. So, you know, I've had to jump fewer hurdles than other people. But I think it's a fairly universal concept that, you know, we let these things either work to fuel what we want to do or we take them as a lesson.
Yeah. And it's so interesting what you said about how you can decide whether that's the end. So it's not just like, this is what I have learned from this experience, which in some cases may be called a failure.
Yeah.
And I'm going to choose whether I want to do it, but it's also that opportunity to reassess and go, okay. And having learned that lesson, do I actually want to keep going with this? Like, is that really what I want to do? So that's,
And you can take, breaks. One of the things that I'm the proudest of that I've made is of a result of me, I think, would be about 5 years ago saying, my art doesn't make me happy. So then I quit. And I told everyone I was quitting, and then I went.
That's so terrifying.
And then
oh man.
And that was what made me accountable of going, I'm actively withdrawing from the community that I built. Yeah. And I probably wouldn't have done that in hindsight, but I went back to where I lived. I'm from Toowoomba originally. And then I ended up just getting a random job and I was working in a funeral home. I think everyone should do it because it gives you a healthy dose of perspective on everything. I would have been 25 when I kind of handled my first person who had died. And then by the time I turned 26, I'd handled over 400. It was a great thing to kind of be this artist in my mid 20s who was kind of angry about things not getting offered to me and having this feeling. There's an equal part of self-loathing and entitlement. Mm. And it's a really poisonous combination. It kind of helped to adjust that. And then I used that year to create a work.
Which was lovely.
Yeah. Which is still in development. It's called Return to the Dirt. And it's about the year that I spent in my hometown looking after all these people. And it coincided with the year that I was getting ready to get married. But that's actually given me a work of art that I'm really proud of. And it's also changed my perspective as an artist to go, I don't think locking yourself away from an artist is the way to create art. I could think of nothing worse than being a full-time artist because I would feel suffocated by that. I think in order to make good art, you need to be a participant in the world around you.
Yeah. Well, Elizabeth Gilbert says that, I think.
She absolutely does. Yeah.
Speaking of, if anyone out there wants to loan me a copy of Big Magic.
I have a copy of Big Magic.
I mean, like I probably will go out and buy a copy.
It's well worth buying.
Yeah. Because you can dog ear it yourself.
It's a very underlinable book.
And she talks about being your own patron, being your own patron.
Yeah.
And how like, because the thing about art is that it takes money to make art in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
Like we create magic because we make something out of nothing, but like to actually make it happen, that takes money.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to have it. And it's very difficult to like make the money from it when you're starting to have the money to make the art to do. Do you see where I'm going?
It's circular. And it's a similar case too, where, you can't really do anything with anybody else until you prove you can do it. So you've got to be your first investor. I'm now kind of getting further along in my career because I've done a few things here and there that people have noticed. I've been in the right place at the right time. Visibility has been a big thing about going, this is me. This is what I'm about. This is my voice. And then people were like, okay, cool. What else have you got?
Mm.
Like that's how you progress. And there is no formula. And again, Elizabeth Gilbert, it's really easy to say that when you've made Eat, Pray, Love and never have to worry about money again.
Yeah,
but the philosophy is there, and I think I'm not going to even bother quoting because I'm going to butcher it, but Brené Brown talks about similar things too.
I love her.
That idea of backing yourself, that's how you push through failure.
Yeah.
So, and that comes from learning to kind of when to shut out the external of when you go, cool. No, I'm going to be my own backer. Yeah. I don't need validation from people around me. It's about the art and myself.
Yeah. That's a really it's more of a wholesome way to look at it too, because very wholesome, but also holistic.
I was going to say holistic. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I would like to, seeing as we're quoting wonderful people at the minute, I would like to talk about this quote from the Dalai Lama, which is like, not getting what you want can sometimes be a wonderful stroke of luck. Do you think that that is true, or is it just kind of like necessary for us to believe, necessary to a certain degree for us to believe that you know, sometimes things just weren't meant to be so that we don't wallow for too long. Like I think within, when we're looking at our personal narratives, mm-hmm. There has to be a certain degree of, I don't know if it's true or not, but it doesn't help me to like believe other things, if that makes sense. It may not necessarily be true that, oh, well, it wasn't meant to be, or, you know, if, the, all those other kind of things.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not going to argue with the Dalai Lama. I'm not going to pick a fight with him on where he stands. But yeah, it's really interesting what you said there about, you know, it's not meant to be. And I'm not a big believer in this idea of the universe providing and that kind of stuff. I think the universe has, if it is this kind of thing, I think it's got better things to do than to look out for me.
right? I feel like it's not like a benevolent or malevolent. It just is.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have feelings about
and
it.
And I get that it's kind of people's catch-all for you know, serendipity and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I try not to do that mainly because I want to try and stay accountable for myself. Mm. There are things that are out of my control as an artist, but there are definitely things that are, and that's mainly what I'm choosing to create. And as long as I can stay true to that and work on my own craft, then hopefully things fall into place but I've already done what I've wanted to do, which is tell the stories that I've wanted to tell.
Yeah. And that's the important thing. Like that is the most important thing to do what you want to do, to make the art that you want to make and to live the life that you know, to build a life that you want to live, not to live in someone else's version of an ideal.
I've broken my own rules a ton of times. I've compromised and broken. I've done things that I'm not necessarily proud of for money and particularly in a creative pursuit. And I found that those are the ones that always end up feeling like work. Mm. And so again, that's why I would suggest to everyone that they have a life outside of their art, because then you don't have to worry about your art paying the bills. Mm. And
there's not so much pressure on the art as well. Like,
yeah, it makes you hate it.
Yeah.
That's why I left it. Cause I was like, it's making me really angry. I'm getting angry at myself. I'm getting angry at what's being made around me. With no real reason. It's just because it was just making me really unhealthy. And now I think I've gotten closer to finding a balance.
That's amazing. And I think, like, you know, we kind of go in and out of balance, and there'll be like times when it goes the other way and it's like, okay, just have to bring it back.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Yeah. Like, wonderful. Thank you so much. Now it is time for the Things I've Never Said segment, where we accept anonymous submissions and confessions from our listeners on the topic we discuss. So the first one we have today is, I find failure so frustrating purely because I constantly tell others how much failure is so important for growth and how failure is not the enemy. Yet I can't implement that same thinking into my own life. Yep. Yeah. No, I feel that. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's so much easier to say than it is to believe.
As the kids would say, same. I can say that. I'm no longer in my 20s. I agree. I think it's not so much about thinking about failure not being the enemy. If you can hear that,
there's a cat behind us.
Yeah.
I don't know what she's doing, but she's living her best life.
Yeah, that's fine. I think... Yeah, it's not about making failure your friend. You don't want to be friends with a failure, but it's just about learning to cohabit. It's like a bad housemate, I guess, where it's, you know, you're both in the situation together. You just pick and choose how you choose to engage with it.
Yeah.
But it is hard to take your own advice.
Absolutely. It's the hardest advice to take the advice that
totally.
You can give. Yeah.
Totally. It's really easy for me to sit here in front of the mic and be like, no, don't worry about it. But in all seriousness, it's about redefining the relationship. It's, you know, nobody escapes failure.
No one
escapes failure.
No one.
The difference that in how it affects people is how people choose to either accept it and then move on or give themselves some sort of closure from that and go, all right, cool. What's next? Absolutely. What else can be done?
I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about how, Roger Federer, when he was, just starting out, he used to throw these terrible, terrible tantrums because he'd get so angry when he like missed a shot or something.
Yeah.
And then he learned how to like sort of reset after he dropped a point or something. Mm-hmm. And that is what made him great. Like he had the talent, he had the skill, but the fact that he could you know, deal with failure and have that conversation with it and be like, okay, we're done now.
Yeah.
If
it's, even if it's that giving yourself a timeline to go, all right, I'm going to give myself this day.
Yeah. To wallow.
To get really fucking angry at myself or angry at whatever's happened or whatever's out of my control. But the key is momentum.
Yeah.
It's motion. Because once you stop, it gets harder and harder to start again.
Yeah. Yeah. So the second one we have is, in regards to failure, oftentimes I tell myself that I didn't achieve said goal or whatever because obviously I didn't deserve it because I hadn't done enough. I hadn't done enough in prep to earn it. Mm. It can turn toxic. It can turn into a toxic headspace pretty quick when you get setback after setback. Like, well, then, do I deserve anything?
Yeah,
that is a tricky one.
That really sucks, and I'm sorry if that's. I'm sorry that's how you feel right now,
I think
if that's
word,
how you sent that through.
The word deserve is something that sticks out to me because like everyone deserves to be loved and to have all their basic needs met and to be like, everyone deserves to succeed. And if you didn't put in the work, well, that just means that you need to put in the work next time. But I think the word deserve is like.
Deserves final. And again, it goes back to this idea of going, okay, cool. Objectively, if you haven't done the work, then that's fine. That is a lesson for next time, or maybe it's because there's some other part of your life that you need to address where you go, you know, is the reason that I'm doing this the night before? If I've got this deadline the day and I'm up at 2 a.m. trying to finish it, what was the cause of that? Is it generally because I'm time poor, or is it because I'm putting this idea of is there something behind that fear of putting things to the last minute? I think people talk about the fear of failure a lot, but I think the fear of success is something that's a lot more pervasive in people. And
we don't notice it as much.
No. And then there's all those sorts of things like imposter syndrome and all that kind of stuff, which again, nobody escapes. Everybody feels that.
Absolutely. That dude who played Tarzan with Margot Robbie, he gave an interview.
Alex Skarsgård.
Yes,
yeah, right.
Him.
Yeah, cool.
He was saying how he constantly feels like someone is going to come and tap him on the shoulder when he's on set and go, wait, mate, the real hero.
Yeah, we know your secret. Yeah. Yeah. We know you're making it up.
Yeah.
And he's from a family of people in the same industry as him too. So there's that as well. So just going back to that idea of going, there might, if specifically it's because you feel like you haven't done enough work, maybe look at that objectively and go, okay, cool. Well, there's a cause behind this. Is it something I need to go and talk to someone about, or is it something that I can work on developing so the next time I'm not in this position?
Yeah. And also I feel like, you know, maybe you can also go back to the last time you did something like it and then go, okay, but did I do more work than I did the last time? Because then that's still an incremental improvement on what you did the last time. And that still shows that you're, doing the thing.
Yeah. It's about controlling the things that you have agency in.
Yes. And learning to be at peace with the fact that you can't control everything and that, So the final one we have is sometimes it's the best lesson in letting go.
Yeah.
I think, we kind of touched on that before, how failure can give you that opportunity to reassess what you really want and what your values are.
Yeah. And why as well, you know.
That's right. The why can be.
Yeah. Why, about going, cool. I think just because of the nature of what we do and you're so caught in trying to go for the next project or go for the next thing, it's really important to kind of stop and reassess and go, why? Why do I want to do this? And also calculating the worth and go, I used to really look down on people who had kind of quit or had left because I was like, well, clearly you just didn't have it. But nowadays I really admire it because it's about acknowledging where you are now. And going, is this making me happy? Mm. Is this making me healthy? Is this an accurate representation of what I want to do?
Yeah.
And that shifts, you know, who I was as an artist at 23 when I wrote my first play is completely different to who I am now. And my objectives for an artist are really different now too.
Yeah.
So if it is final and you go, cool, all right, I don't want to do this anymore. It's not fulfilling me, it's not making me happy. I think there's real power in accepting that and moving on to the next thing or using it to shape the next step.
Absolutely. And I think there's if you realize that what you are doing is no longer serving you or like the life that you want to lead. Mm. And it's not something that you want to, there is no shame in being like, you know what? This isn't for me anymore.
Absolutely.
I think that that's like you were saying, like it's a very powerful thing to be like this right here now, not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And once you learn to shut out the external on that too, and other people's expectations of you, or what you think they are.
Yes. Like because, what do people actually expect?
Because normally when you'll just tell people and they go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
As long as you're happy. Like that's the thing, but we have an idea in our heads about what other people are expecting or what they think of us.
Mm.
And we're not really thinking about us at all.
No, because everyone's
worrying about themselves.
Exactly. We're all like so involved in our own inner worlds and crises that we don't have time to be looking over there at Bob or whatever.
Yeah. And just the idea, like we talk about these things ending, you know, it's become really easy to consider ourselves in the personal narrative, and our lives aren't stories. Mm. You know, there's no beginnings or endings. It's just kind of moving on into the next thing.
Mm.
So once you let go of that as well, that idea that, you know, I'm closing this chapter forever and I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to be a designer anymore. You know, if that's not what you want, that's fine. Then you just, you know, hold it tightly and let it go lightly. That's.
Yeah. I would also like to say at this point, thank you. That was very wise. There is a cat in a box next to us.
Yeah, there's a cat in a box.
And I'm just going to put it on the floor while I ask you, Steve. What would you do if you knew 10,000 people would do the same?
Oh, what would I do? I would put money into my own bank account. I think that would be the thing. If I'm like, I'm going to put $10 into my bank account, and then other people have to do that. And then I'm a rich man. And then I.
Excellent.
I'm fine. Yes. In all seriousness, I was doing a workshop this week, and one of the questions that I had kind of, because I was talking about voice and talking about writers' voices. And part of that is learning to develop your sight in what you see around the world. And one of the provoking questions that I had for everyone was, when was the last time you felt empathy to a stranger? And I actually couldn't answer it myself. So I think that's probably what I would do. I would try and maintain my curiosity about the world around me. Because I think when we're curious about the things around us, that's when we develop our empathy and that's when we start learning again.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Steve, for like talking to me so eloquently about that and for being so frank with, you know, your experiences and everything.
That's, yeah.
It's so, so wonderful. Thank you.
That's all right. And if you've just started listening now, failure sucks, but sometimes it doesn't have to. That's kind of, we've just summarized that. There you go.
Well,
that's the 5 second podcast.
Cool. So I will just delete everything that came
before. Yeah. The rest of it was kind of just a first draft and we're ready to go now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, yeah, you have to do your trash draft before you do your first draft.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes. thank you so much. Where can we find you and do you have anything to plug?
So everything in development at the moment is in development. So there's probably not much I can give you there, but I'm not active on social media, but you can find me on Instagram at @bysteveperry. It's mostly just pictures of my dog.
The dog is beautiful.
Yeah, she's
dog
a rat.
Dog is Midge.
Yeah, she's a tiny bug and she's a rat bag. And but you can also find copies of two of the plays that I've written, Jane and Cal Go to Hell and Escape from the Breakup Forest, which was my very first one. It's like reading my diary. at a very different time in my life. Those are both at playlab.com.au. So if you want to read a bit about what I'm about.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. And beautiful. Oh, and if you're getting married, I also do weddings.
Yes. So Steve is also a celebrant.
Send me an email. You can just Google that. You'll find me.
Beautiful.
Cool.
Thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast today. And thank you all for listening. Thanks as always to Zane at That's Not Canon Productions for producing the show. Graphics are by Claudia Piggott. Music by Jessica Fletcher. If you stumbled upon us, don't forget to rate and review the podcast. And you can find us on Instagram at StumbleThroughPod and Facebook at StumbleThroughPodcast. Thank you all so much. Have a lovely day. We'll see you soon. Bye.
The Disney vs. Disney Debates podcast is all about finding the answer to one simple question. What is the best Disney movie of all time? Maybe the question isn't that simple. So join us every Saturday as hosts from all across That's Not Canon fight for their movies in one-on-one debates moderated by me, Zain C. Weber, in order to decide once and for all which of Disney's beloved classics or recent hits will take the crown.
Mine.
Save it for the show. Available now on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever you find podcasts.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.